Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. This is the day we speak with journalists about coverage of the week's news. And on today's roundtable, we are discussing coverage of the healthcare debate. This week, the Republican leadership postponed the vote for their healthcare bill, which was secretly written by 13 Republican men. They can only afford to lose two votes. And last week, four conservative senators said they would vote against the bill because they say it does not go far enough. The bill would cut Medicaid funding by almost $800 billion. Medicaid provides health care coverage for one in five Americans and pays for nearly all births, half of all births in the country. That is 50% of births in the United States. The bill would also give $1 trillion in tax cuts to the rich and corporations over the next decade. If this particular bill passes, next year, 15 million more people would be uninsured. And also, last weekend, the AP is reporting that the Koch brothers told Republicans at a weekend gathering that if they do not get this bill passed, the piggy bank will be closed. So why isn't that angle getting more attention? Joining us today are two journalists who cover these issues very closely. Elizabeth Rosenthal is editor-in-chief of Kaiser Health News. Before joining Kaiser Health News, she was a correspondent with the New York Times. Elizabeth is author of the book An American Sickness, How Healthcare Became Big Business and How You Can Take It Back. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Trudy Lieberman, a longtime contributor to the Columbia Journalism Review, where she writes about media coverage of healthcare and retirement issues. Trudy also writes a bi-monthly column called Thinking About Health for the Rural Health News Service. It appears in rural newspapers. Trudy is the author of five books, including Slanting the Story, The Forces That Shape the News. Hi, Trudy. Thank you for joining us.
Hi.
Well, it's great to have both of you. Before we dive in and talk about this healthcare debate, as we always do on our media roundtable, we like to highlight journalism that stood out this week. So, Elizabeth Rosenthal with Kaiser Health News, let's start with you. What caught your attention this week?
Well, I'm really proud of something we did that was in the New York Times that was an article about nursing home care and how much of nursing home care is paid for by Medicaid. And I think people don't realize that includes the nursing home care of people like you and me, people who went into nursing homes with good insurance, who maybe were upper middle class in their lives. And because we're living longer and health care is so very expensive in our country, by the end of their lives, they're on Medicaid. So I really wanted to make everyone understand that Medicaid is not just this kind of niche program for the people who are low income. It's really about all of us, as healthcare is really about all of us.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, and we'll talk about this throughout the show. It also provides jobs for people who work in those nursing home facilities.
Yep. Certainly. And the thing is, you know, many of those people who work in low-wage jobs in healthcare don't themselves have health insurance or didn't until the Affordable Care Act came around. So, again, you know, the bottom of our healthcare totem pole, a lot of those people depend right now on the Affordable Care Act and its expansion of Medicaid to people with low incomes.
Since you brought up a piece about Medicaid, I also wanted to give kudos to Alexandra Zavis at the LA Times, and she wrote a story about how these Medicaid cuts would affect women. She writes that women make up the majority of adults who depend on the program, and one of the lines that stood out for me, and we can talk about this later, but under the Republican bill, women would lose their health coverage if they don't return to work just 60 days after they give birth. And I haven't seen this reported in many other places, so I just want to give kudos to Alexandra Zavis with the LA Times. And what about you, Trudy Lieberman? What did you see this week that caught your attention?
Well, I, too, liked the Kaiser piece on Medicaid because this is something that I've been reporting on quite a lot in the last few weeks and trying to encourage more reporting on it. It seems to me, looking at this very carefully over the last several weeks, Medicaid in some ways has gotten kind of short shrift. it's kind of taken a back seat, I think, to the 12 million or so people who signed up for Obamacare policies and who may or may not lose their coverage depending on what happens with the health care bill. So there's been a lot of focus on what will happen to them, what will happen to them if they have pre-existing conditions, and so on. And I think Medicaid, which covers some 75 million people in this country, in some ways is a far bigger program, and reporters haven't been too eager to talk about that. And the coverage of long-term care is something that I, throughout my whole career, have written a lot about. So it's very close to me, and I was very pleased to see the Kaiser story and to try to get some important outlet to focus on it. The last few weeks, I've also been writing a lot about trying to get reporters to write about how this would affect their communities, and I was very gratified. I'll pass this little anecdote along to you. Just yesterday, I got an email from a man somewhere in the Midwest, and he had a very important question he wanted to ask me. He said he'd been reading stuff I had written on Medicaid, and he wanted to know what would this mean for his family. He has a 53-year-old daughter who is mentally disabled and also is deaf. And he says, does that mean that Medicaid would not cover her if the time comes for her to go to a nursing home? And I thought, wow, what a really good question. And, yeah, the bottom line is it might affect her because we don't really know what's going to happen. But what also struck me is that nobody seemed to be answering that question. Hmm. The national media were not going there. And so I think that that's been a big gap.
So what explains that gap, Trudy? I mean, if they're going after this very popular and needed program that affects 75 million people, I still have not really heard a reporter listening to the radio and television pointedly ask a Republican who supports this bill, why are you going after Medicaid so brutally?
Well, I think the point is that reporters have never been terribly interested in covering Medicaid. And of course, there have been individual reporters who have done a really good job covering it, and we at CJR have praised their work through the years. But they're really few and far between, and I'm sad to say that a couple of the really good ones have now gone over to work for hospitals now because their news outlets could no longer support their work. Hmm. And what's happened is that the editors see this as an issue that doesn't affect their readers. They see it as an issue for poor people. They see it as people who are perhaps lazy and they have to go on this welfare program in order to get health care, and they just don't think it's a popular thing to put in their newspapers or talk about on TV. And, you know, we believe, of course, and I know Libby also would agree with this, that this is really misguided thinking because all of us could end up on Medicaid someday.
Did you say that healthcare reporters are going to work for hospitals?
Well, some of them have lost their jobs at news outlets. And so they've had to earn a living somehow, and some of them have gone to do PR work for the local hospital.
Wow. Well, kudos to Kaiser Health News, which we should say is independent of Kaiser, and the New York Times and the LA Times. There's a lot of good reporting out there on this bill, but you have to read a lot of stories to put all of the pieces together. At least that was our experience. And you can find those stories at yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by Elizabeth Rosenthal, editor-in-chief of Kaiser Health News and author of An American Sickness, and Trudy Lieberman, a longtime contributor to the Columbia Journalism Review. And if you have any questions or comments for our guests, Elizabeth and Trudy spend all of their time really focusing on these issues and diving in to figure out what these bills would do, how it would affect people. So you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. Obviously, this issue is getting so much attention, as it should. But what do you think about the coverage? You can tweet us at Your Call Radio or email feedback at Your Call Radio. Medicaid.org. Elizabeth, so much of the coverage about the Senate Republican leadership to pass their secretly drafted bill has really revolved around the political drama in Washington about different factions within the Republican Party and how they've reacted to this piece of legislation. On NPR all week, I have heard hosts ask Democrats, well, can't you just work with the Republicans? That seemed to be the number one question. What are your thoughts about the media coverage, the kind of conversation that we have been hearing over the past week or 2 weeks?
Well, I think it's not just the media coverage, it's the actual debate. I think I tweeted yesterday, this is making me insane. This healthcare debate has been 100% about business and politics and 0% about health. And I think that's, you know, it really is making me insane. And I think because the political drama is so kind of, you know, there's all this theatrics. A lot of the commentary has followed the theatrics as rather than looking at the people. Although I would say also in the Washington Post this morning, there was a really nice piece just looking at how this bill would affect a whole bunch of people. And the important thing, and I realize this is really important to stress to younger readers and listeners who may not remember what life was like before the Affordable Care Act. This is upending a lot of lives, both in and out of the exchanges, both poor and rich. Again, we've been through this healthcare upheaval, and now here we are starting again with a lot of people poised to lose things that they take for granted right now. And that's something we all should be really worried about.
Elizabeth, what are your sources telling you about why the Republicans are going after Medicaid so hard?
Well, I mean, I think it's, you know, Medicaid has increased in cost hugely over the last 20 years. I mean, the graphs are just, you know, inflationary up, 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 up. So I think, you know, if you want to save money, you go where the money is being spent. And they're very into, you know, we've got to make this, we've got to bring down the costs. And of course, you know, they're trying to pass a new health bill through budget reconciliation, which means they need 50 votes instead of the normal, a simple majority instead of the larger number. And to do that, they have to make it a budget issue. So if you want to get the budget controlled, you go after Medicaid. So that's kind of the practical reason it's not about health care. I mean, that being said, you know, there's certainly ways to make health care more cost effective in this country. And that's what my book was about. You know, we spend 2 to 3 times more than any other country in the rest of the world. So what we really need to do is look at, you know, why are we spending 2 to 3 times as much? We could get a lot more for what we pay, and that would allow us to keep a relatively robust program for Medicaid, for the Medicaid expansion, for a lot of the consumers who are out there struggling with bills. I mean, we tend to think of these in the political debate, these high prices people are encountering for premiums and deductibles have to do with, oh, you know, this bill or that bill. They're not really. What they have to do with is the crazy prices we pay in the United States compared to the rest of the world. And that's the primary problem going forward to me.
Trudy, what would you add to this? According to a USA Today poll, only 12% of Americans support the Senate Republican health care plan. Why do you think that they would go after a bill that is so cruel? What is their end game here?
Well, I'll say a couple things about this. I think the end game is that they really don't care about what's in the bill or what's happening to people. I think they just want to pass the bill. And as one Washington reporter told me this week for a piece that I've been working on, the goals, when you ask Republicans what their goals are, it's not like it was during 08, 09, 2010 when the ACA passed. The goals then were to cover more people and try to get a handle on these runaway costs that we have. But the goal now, this person said to me, is how do we get the 51 votes? I do want to say one thing about the low poll ratings for this. I think that I'm going to give kudos to the press, and as many of you know, I've been rather critical over the years of how the ACA was covered initially, and thought that the journalists could have done a lot better in explaining how this thing would actually work, and they didn't. But looking back over the last few months, I would say that I think there's been a positive shift here in public thinking, and I have to credit the press with some of this. If we look back to 08, 09, 2010, we will see that the press really did drive home the point that people needed coverage, and that if they didn't have health insurance, they suffered severe consequences, both medically and financially. And I think that message kind of got through to people. And then what we've seen since January is more of these kinds of stories sort of sputtering out from the press a little bit here and there that kind of culminated in the town halls that the Republicans held at the end of March. They were disastrous for the Republican members of Congress who held them. People didn't like what they were doing. They didn't like that they were crafting their bills in secret. They didn't like the fact that they weren't being told what was in it. They just felt kept in the dark. But I think something else was at work here, that all of this coverage about the need for people to have a way to pay for medical care has finally begun to sink in. And people now realize that, hey, wait a minute, if this bill is going to yank coverage away from people, this is not a good thing. We don't really like that. So I think that's being reflected in these very dismal poll numbers that you see. And I think looking at the press coverage now over a long horizon, as I've done, I would have to say I would give them some kudos for this, because there is a shift here. And I think that Kathleen Sebelius actually said it very well a week or so on the NewsHour. She said, we're now having a conversation nationally that we would not have had 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And there's a recognition that it's not a good thing for people with pre-existing conditions not to have health care, and that there's beginning a recognition that everybody has to have it and to be in the system in some way. And I would agree with her. I would think that this is a big change and a positive one.
Trudy Lieberman is a longtime contributor to the Columbia Journalism Review. She writes a bi-monthly column called Thinking About Health for the Rural Health News Service. It's interesting because her column runs in rural health or in rural newspapers, and she gets a lot of reaction from her listeners. We're also joined by Elizabeth Rosenthal, editor-in-chief of Kaiser Health News and author of An American Sickness, How Healthcare Became Big Business and How You Can Take It Back. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also tweet at Your Call Radio or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Natalie in San Francisco. Hi, Natalie. Welcome to the show. Oh, no, Natalie. Sorry about that. You can give us a call back. I wanted to ask you again about the funding, because this bill would cut Medicaid funding by almost $800 billion, and then it would give $1 trillion in tax cuts to the rich and corporations over the next decade. And we were struck by a very to-the-point factual headline in the New York Times. It's a piece by Margot Sanger Katz, and it's shifting dollars from poor to rich is a key part of the Senate health bill. And Elizabeth, you don't see headlines like this on a regular basis. This one really stood out for us.
Yes, I think, you know, Margot writes what she sees from the data, and that's what the data shows. In other times you might say, well, that sounds really editorial, but it's just the facts, and the facts of this bill are pretty stark, including the facts that come out of the Congressional Budget Office report. You know, you can't argue with them. Another 22 million people uninsured, that's a big number.
Right.
Premiums going up despite the new act, that's a big number. You know, these are just the numbers. And that's really the problem with this bill, politics aside, is that the numbers just don't add up.
Trudy, what would you add?
Well, I think I would agree with that. But I think in this country, we have generally been allergic to giving handouts to people. And we see this going back to the time of the Great Depression, when we didn't want to give people food. In New York, you could either, if you were poor and destitute, you could get $4 worth of food for the week or a little bit of coal. You couldn't get both. And I think that there's this historical nature, the historical streak going back in our nature, that we really don't want people to get handouts. And when Medicaid was established in 1965, it was set up, unlike Medicare, as an entitlement that people paid into, much like Social Security. Medicaid was set up very differently with a different kind of financing model. Half of the costs are borne by the states and half by the federal government. And people have to pass an income and an asset test in order to qualify, not like Medicare, which is very different. And people confuse the two. And I think that was put in there deliberately as a throwback to the way we thought of the poor and the way we like to give handouts to the poor or not give handouts to the poor. And so in some ways, Medicaid was a great achievement, even though it was difficult to qualify for in many states. And now it's going to be even more difficult to qualify as some states begin to put in work requirements and other requirements. And that goes back to, you know, we really don't want to give people anything. And so I think when we see this shift, as Margot pointed out in her story, a great deal of money going from the Medicaid program that deals with people who don't have very much money to entities, corporations, and people who have a great deal of money. That, you know, in a way goes back to what America did before. And so it's kind of wiping out the gains and the thinking of Lyndon Johnson's Great Society in the 1960s that kind of brought us out of that. And so I would read it as, you know, if all this passes, that we're going to go back the way it was before.
So we're talking about $1 trillion in tax cuts for the ultra wealthy. And if the Senate bill passed, a capital gains tax cut for the most affluent Americans would be retroactive to the beginning of this year. This is a tax on investments. And investment percentage increases are far more larger than the economy growing in this country. I mean, if you're rich, you're just getting a lot richer in this country. And I wanted to ask you both about a piece that I think deserves a lot more attention from the Associated Press about a weekend donor retreat attended by 18 politicians last weekend. And the Koch brothers basically told them that if you don't repeal Obamacare, the piggy bank will be closed. One Texas-based donor said his Dallas piggy bank was now closed until he saw progress. Doug Deason said, quote, get Obamacare repealed and replaced, get tax reform passed, get it done, and we will open the piggy bank back up. So Trudy, why isn't this getting more attention?
That's a very good question. I think that we haven't seen a lot of reporting, actually, on contributions made at all to this health, quote, reform effort. And I noticed this earlier this spring when I decided to look at the contributions that one of the big insurance companies had made. And it was a Blue Cross plan that made a lot of contributions far out of proportion to any other Blue Cross plan. So I got to thinking, what is it they really are trying to do here? And I really wanted to see some reporters kind of report this out, but I haven't. And I think that maybe the money is just flowing around so much that we're just getting tired of these big money stories. Or maybe there are constraints at the news organizations that don't want to get into this. But it's very significant, this AP story, because are the Koch brothers writing the legislation via their donations?
What do you think, Elizabeth? In order to get into this meeting, it was $100,000. Mike Pence met with the Kochs, according to this reporting. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think this, you know, sitting here between the White House and Congress, I think this is a bipartisan problem in healthcare. We have been looking at campaign donations to senators and congressmen. We were building a database on that. And, you see it on both sides of the aisle. And I think that's why some of the common sense bills, for example, allowing Medicare to negotiate drug prices, don't get out of committee, even though they have bipartisan sponsorship. It's because there's a lot of money from the healthcare industry and from interested parties,
right,
creating our current healthcare system and preventing it from change. And in this case, does it surprise me that the Koch brothers want to bring down the Affordable Care Act? Not Not really at all, because you know, the ACA, Obamacare, has been such a kind of bugaboo to the right, and I think in largely symbolic ways, because remember, it's modeled after a Republican plan. It does include many market forces. It could not include many of the more direct price controls that President Obama initially would have liked in there, because he tried to accommodate these business interests. So. You know, I think the issue of how money affects our political system and our healthcare system is huge, and we all need to dig into it more.
Why don't these issues get more attention, these systemic problems of, you know, billionaires making decisions, money really influencing what happens in Washington? I'm glad you brought up Obamacare, because I was just reading this column back in 2012 by J.D. Klein, who works with the American Enterprise Institute. He had a column that said the conservative case for Obamacare, basically that conservatives should back Obamacare because it is a market-driven bill. And remember, single-payer doctors were arrested during the hearings back then. The healthcare industry got a seat at the table, but the single-payer doctors did not back then. So why aren't these follow-the-money issues and these systemic issues getting more attention, Elizabeth?
Well, I hope we're giving them more attention. I think part of my interest in coming down here to work at Kaiser Health News was at many newspapers, things are a bit siloed when it comes to health care. You know, there's a health section, there's a science section, there's the business people, there are the politics people. And I think the thing that's fascinating and complicated about healthcare is that it really involves all of the above in our country. So I think we need to do a much better job of that. I think the secondary problem, as we're seeing as reporters, in trying to follow the money, that the pathway is unbelievably convoluted. You know, when you do a campaign contribution, it's often masked as other things. So, you know, it is a lot of heavy lifting to follow the money in healthcare at a time when newsrooms are shrinking, health reporters are less and less common in newsrooms, as Trudy mentioned. We have a lot of them come here, but most newspapers just don't have that firepower focused on healthcare. And P.S., I would add right now, where are the investigative people focusing? Of necessity and probably properly on, you know, the Russia hacking scandal, on Comey, on Syria. And so that investigative power, healthcare is not receiving for the most part. It's never been kind of a sexy issue for investigative reporters. And I fear with all the other distractions being created in Washington, we're not seeing the attention we should generally, although, as I said, you know, we're trying. and I think we will see more of that. But we haven't thought of healthcare as a political money issue. And that's part of my message to people, is that we should become healthcare voters. Mm. We should, you know, this is what you see when you walk into the doctor's office or in the hospital. Those high bills, those are a result of our political process not being willing to attack the kind of basic fundamental structure of our healthcare system. And I know, you know, the single payer people feel they haven't gotten a seat at the table. And I'm not, you know, I feel like single payer has worked in some countries. It may or may not be the solution for ours. But patients and doctors generally haven't had a seat at the table. So whatever our solution is, I think we all have to get out there and vote and pressure our representatives to do what's right for healthcare, for patients, for their physicians, rather than for, gee, what will balance the budget and what's, you know, what's good politically and what's good for our big donors. Because
right.
It's about us.
Elizabeth Rosenthal is editor-in-chief of Kaiser Health News, independent from Kaiser, and Trudy Lieberman is a longtime contributor to the Columbia Journalism Review. This is our media roundtable, and today we are discussing coverage of the healthcare debate. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
Thank you. This is Your Call on KLW Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a comment or question at the show's website, yourcallradio.org, or tweet us at yourcallradio. Coming up at 11, host Lauren Schiller and Inflection Point. Today, Laura Weidman-Powers of Code 2040 talks about how to end structural racism in America. Coming up at 11.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up on Monday, we will rebroadcast a conversation we had about an incredible new documentary called Chasing Coral. It takes a look at the health of our coral reefs. They are so, so important to our ecosystem. And the film got beautiful footage, also haunting footage. At one point, you actually watch coral bleaching right before your eyes in the Great Barrier Reef. So I hope you can tune in for that. And then on Tuesday, we'll rebroadcast our conversation about gerrymandering and how it shapes the U.S. electoral map. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, it's our media roundtable, and we are discussing coverage of the healthcare debate. This week, the Republican leadership postponed the vote for their healthcare bill. It was secretly written by 13 Republican men. They can only afford to lose two votes. And if that happens, Mike Pence would have to come in for a tie vote to break up that. And last week, four conservative senators said they would vote against it because they say it doesn't go far enough. So what would it do? Well, it would cut Medicaid funding by almost $800 billion, and it would give $1 trillion in tax cuts to the rich and corporations over the next decade. We're joined by Elizabeth Rosenthal, editor-in-chief of Kaiser Health News, and Trudy Lieberman, longtime contributor to the Columbia Journalism Review. And if you have any questions or comments about the coverage that you've heard and seen this week, have you heard any coverage or read anything besides this AP report about the money behind all of this and the Koch brothers and their donors saying, if you don't repeal this, we're going to close the piggy bank? Why isn't that getting more attention? 866-798-8255. You can also tweet at Your Call Radio or drop us an email, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Before we get to calls, Trudy, I wanted to ask you the same question. Elizabeth was talking about why healthcare is not reported as a money issue. What are your thoughts on that? Why don't we see more coverage following the money on this issue?
Well, I think that it gets back to the question you asked earlier about why don't we see more systematic systemic issues. And certainly money in politics is a major systemic issue. We used to have a lot more systemic coverage. When I started in this business a very long time ago, I was for a very large regional newspaper, and that's what we did. We covered systemic issues in the state, and that continued for quite a while. By the time we got to the 80s, I think, and certainly well into the 90s, newspapers was sort of dominant, and TV to some extent, that was sort of the dominant way people got their news in those days. They tired of those kind of issues. And partly it was because, one, they were becoming very difficult to do. When the campaign finance laws were changed in the mid-70s, it got very complex. In some ways, more data became available, but in other ways, it became a lot harder to interpret what was really going on. And second of all, the business community became very ascendant and were very influential in the media business, actually. And I think newspaper editors, a lot of them saw the handwriting on the wall. The business was beginning to decline even in those days. And they were very protective of their advertisers. And they weren't going to launch too many boats. So if a reporter came to them and wanted to do a systemic story about X, I think they had to think long and hard about whether they would do it. And in those days, really up until the mid-90s, healthcare was not really a big issue. Costs were climbing. HMOs were becoming pretty important, but no one paid a whole lot of attention to them. Medicare was very popular, was doing very well, even though there wasn't much cost control in the system. And so people didn't think very much about healthcare, and it really wasn't until the last decade or two that this became a beat and that people really started looking at it and trying to figure out, hey, you know, this is a big part of our economy. We've got to see what's going on. And I think that right now the barriers that we began to see against doing this kind of systemic reporting are still with us today. If somebody were to go out and try to do some investigation now of the Koch brothers' influence in healthcare or anything else, I mean, that would take a long time and a lot of research. And I think that most news outlets aren't going to give people the time to do it.
We have a number of callers on the line, so let's go to Cynthia in San Francisco. Hi, Cynthia. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I would like to make a comment on the issue of nursing home care and Medicaid, and I thank you very much for addressing this neglected media reporting issue. Briefly, I would like to say that my only family member is a younger sister who suffers from early onset Alzheimer's, and I did everything possible to keep her at home as long as I could until it was no longer medically safe to do so. She worked her entire young life, spent, saved all her money, had good assets, and she had to spend down all of her assets to the poverty level to qualify for Medicare in order to get placed in a nursing home. Before that happened, I chose to spend all of my savings to keep her at home as long as possible. If she is affected by these Medicaid cuts, she will have to stay in a nursing home that I cannot afford to keep her at, which means that she would have to come back to her residence in San Francisco. And she is on end-of-life care for early onset Alzheimer's. She would be dead in 2 weeks, I am sure. Or if she's not, I would be dead in 2 weeks trying to care for her. So I just would welcome, no one knows what's going to happen with this. And living with the anxiety of this kind of cut, as so many people have attested to, is horrendous. But I would welcome the comments of your guests on, you know, their issue. And thank you, New York Times, for covering this. The only place I read about it.
Yes, thank you for that. It was produced in collaboration with Kaiser Health News, where Elizabeth Rosenthal is a reporter, is editor-in-chief. Elizabeth, what about Cynthia's comment?
Well, I think that's the problem for a lot of these issues, that we can say all we want, do we like cuts or not, but there's no plan B, right? It's not like, well, what happens if? And I think it's producing anxiety, most importantly, among patients, and understandably so. And I said to, you know, what happens to my, not mine, but a friend of mine's mother who's in a nursing home on Medicaid? What happens if that funding is pulled? The nursing home can't come up with the money to support that care. Are they going to just kick people out on the street? There is no viable plan B. And that's why, in many ways, I kind of cringe when people have the debate about, oh, is health care a right? I think, in a way, it's not even a moral issue. It's a necessity. It's not like there's another option. You know, we all need health care. We just will. We, you know, a pregnant woman needs to give birth. It's not a question of whether it's her right or not. It's just is. So I think without a plan B, you see this anxiety, frankly, not just with the patients, but it's partly why we see insurers pulling out of these markets, not because they didn't think the ACA was viable, but because they look forward to the kind of turmoil that's being created, and there's no sense of, like, wow, this makes me nervous. Can I afford to stay in? Now, I would say they can, but, you know, their business decisions based on their being mostly for-profit companies, it makes them really nervous that there's no plan B. There's just, we're going to take this away. Okay, so what are you going to do?
Trudy, what would you add?
Yeah, I would add two things here. One, the caller is absolutely right, and she talks about a Medicaid send-out, which is a very demeaning process. A middle-class family has to spend all of their income, virtually all of their assets, depending on their state, to arrive at the Medicaid levels that make them eligible for the nursing home care. And frequently what that does is impoverish the spouse that remains at home. The rules are slightly better than they were several years ago. There were some positive changes that were made to the program, but still it is a very difficult, demeaning procedure that people have to go through. Second point is we as a country have never been able to come to grips with any kind of a national program to pay for long-term care. There was the beginnings of such a program in the Affordable Care Act. It was not totally well conceived and didn't go anywhere because it really wasn't viable. But at least there was the beginnings of people thinking about how are we really going to pay for long-term care. We know that insurance, long-term care insurance, really doesn't work very well as a way to pay for this for a lot of reasons. We know that families cannot afford to pay $100,000 a year for care for a loved one, and it may be even more depending on the state you live in. And so some people who were very active in healthcare and healthcare policy tried to get more people to recognize the fact that we don't have a way to do this, but nobody seems to really want to write about it. And when we look at the media coverage of long-term care issues, there's a ton of stuff that gets written about caregiving and workers' burnout, all those kinds of issues, and they're all really important. But very little, if next to nothing, is being talked about how are we going to pay for this long-term. And as Libby says, there is no plan B. And so as a country, at some point, we're going to have to come to grips with what is plan B, because we have an aging population. And if Medicaid is cut substantially, Medicaid is not going to be the program of default that it is today.
Well, thank you so much for calling and sharing this, your story about your family, Cynthia. And we will definitely continue to cover that very important angle. Let's go next to Mary Elise in San Francisco. Hi, Mary Elise. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for doing this. I haven't heard any conversation about the people who were encouraged by their employers to go on to Obamacare. And I think this, I don't know if they're in the 15 million or if it's another set, and how are they going to get back on any health insurance? And are employers going to help them get back on or cover it?
Elizabeth, do you want to take that one?
Sure. No, I think this is another area of great uncertainty. You know, with the Medicaid expansion or encouraging people to go on to the exchanges to buy individual plans when companies weren't offering health insurance, now what happens? And I think that's, you know, when the administration or some of the GOP people say, oh, well, we'll just repeal it first and then we'll replace it sometime later. Well, and I think politically this is really an important group of people, because these are people who now have insurance through the ACA or through the Medicaid expansion or through the exchanges. And I think what we're seeing at the town hall meetings, while I like to think that it's, you know, the press helped encourage awareness, which I think it did, I think it's also, you know, the ACA was transformational in that it gave a bunch of people insurance for the first time and a bunch of people insurance through its processes. And now you're going to take them away? Well, that's tens of millions of people who are scared and angry and feel like they've encountered a bait and switch. And I don't think the GOP has a good answer for those people now. And I think that's partly what you're seeing at the town halls, people who benefited from the ACA, even if they would say from the start, well, I don't like this. I don't like Obama, or I don't like Obamacare. Mm-hmm. They now have insurance. And you're going to take that away? Well, that may change how they view the politics.
Well, thank you for calling in, Mary Elise. Let's go next to Lisa in Oakland. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I guess I'm curious on how this breaks down economically for people like the Koch brothers and other big businesses, because clearly appealing to their morality is pointless, and I don't really think they care so much about personal tax cuts, but I imagine how it's going to affect them in terms of requiring insurance for employees. And again, why aren't other businesses like hospitals, other companies, other large corporations that benefit from the ACA lobbying? Why do the Koch brothers have such a big outsized effect? Secondly, how does this actually affect the Koch brothers and other companies like the Koch brothers in terms of their bottom line, in terms of big businesses? Because a lot of people who I would imagine would prefer to have the government paying for health insurance, because then it relieves the corporations of the responsibility of having to take care of their employees, which is a big part of the employee benefits package.
Well, it seems like there's a couple. Do you want to take that, Trudy, first? It seems like there's a couple things there, because a lot of people are just realizing for the first time that the wealthy were taxed to ensure that people, low-income people, poor people, had subsidies. And that's why we're seeing this trillion-dollar, what's called a tax cut, which would go to the ultra-wealthy and corporations. And according to this Guardian story, the Kochs are calling for a complete repeal of Obamacare, but they also want a major tax overhaul, and they're going to begin hosting rallies and other events in the summer for this.
Well, I think with the Kochs, I'm sure that they provide insurance for their employees. I'd be surprised if they didn't, but it's very ideological. And I think that this group does not like government in any way, shape, or form, and government levies taxes. And in our country, we've been allergic to paying taxes from the very beginning. And yes, indeed, there was a tax levied on wealthier people to finance some of the subsidies under Obamacare. And it was a transfer from the rich to the less rich, to use the discussion that we had previous. And what we're really seeing here now is, in this move to cut the taxes that were imposed under the ACA, is part of this notion that we really don't like to pay taxes in this country. And as long as the business community has the upper hand, which they do, and some have it even higher than others, like the Koch brothers, you're going to see a big push to get rid of all those taxes and perhaps even more. And how that's going to shake out in terms of not only health care, but all other government services remains to be seen. And I think this is a huge issue the public needs to be aware of.
And we did a show earlier this week about gerrymandering, and our guest Dave Daly says that the other problem here is, because of gerrymandering, a lot of these Republicans, the more conservative ones, are afraid that if they do not work to repeal Obamacare, they will face a challenge from someone who's even further to the right. Mm-hmm. So it's not even the Dems they're worried about. It's someone who's even more conservative, because the Koch brothers and their billionaire backers have so much money, and they say they're going to spend about $400 million on the 2018 election. So what are your thoughts about that, Elizabeth?
Yeah, I mean, I think with the Koch brothers, and this is a really important point in terms of solutions, it's not so much their business interests that drive what they're doing as their political views. And I think Trudy mentioned this, that, you know, this is their kind of gut opposition to taxes, to public programs, to Obama. But I think we can really look to a number of big businesses to be on our side, because I think so far they've been mostly asleep at the wheel. But who suffers a lot with patients are these businesses who are paying rising health care costs every year. And so now we see some pretty interesting movement, like the Pacific Business Group on Health, a bunch of, I wouldn't say the huge employers, but mid to large employers banding together and saying, wait, we've been kind of asleep at the wheel. We need to advocate for our employees. And it may not be because they care so much about their employees, but because it's breaking their banks to keep paying these rising deductibles, these rising co-pays, and to kind of deal with employee anger that, like, hey, why haven't I gotten a raise in the last 5 years? Well, it's because we're paying more and more and more for your health care.
Right. And it goes to the underlying philosophy of the Republican Party and their mission to unravel government.
Yeah.
And we have an email just about profits from Philip, who says he heard one cable TV commentator say that the health insurance companies have made record profits since the passage of the ACA. Elizabeth, is that true?
Yeah, the ACA is good for insurers. You know, I think one of the fallacies which I always correct is when people say, well, why aren't insurers doing more? They're on our side, you know, and I think it's a misunderstanding of what insurers do. Basically, they are for-profit businesses. Their primary responsibility is to their shareholders, not to you and me. And, you know, we don't think of our car insurer as in our corner. You know, they take in premiums and they pay out claims. And as one person says in my book, you know, they're too big to care about you. So they will do what they can do for their shareholders before they will care about you and me in patient care, unless our employers who buy this insurance for us start making a big, big stink. And that's employers, it's unions, it's patient groups. We all have to speak out more about that this system isn't working for us.
We have about a minute left, and I know so many people are concerned about this current bill. People who are, they have family members who are in nursing homes, those of us who will be in a nursing home in 10 or 20 years, maybe. You know, people who make less than 20 grand a year who are on Medicaid and are having children, people with disabilities. I mean, so many people are stressed, so stressed about this. Elizabeth, what are you hearing from Republicans about how they're going to change this bill? Because they say they might bring up a vote next week.
Well, we're not hearing very much from Republicans at all. And I think, you know, what we're watching here in D.C. is Senator McConnell has about $200 million in savings from the bill, or $200 billion in savings that he can pass out. And is he going to try and use that to convince some of the holdout Republican senators to come on board? I don't know. To me, it's a heavy lift because all of these Republican senators, many are from states where they expanded Medicaid, and they're going to have some really, really unhappy constituents if they help push this bill across the line. So I think it's a nail biter on the ground and a nail biter in Congress. And I don't think any of us knows, even the smart people I have here working with me in D.C., we're watching, but it's really hard to predict.
Trudy, 30 seconds.
I think if people are concerned, as obviously they are, they should make that known to their representatives in Congress loud and clear and many, many times. Because what we've learned from the town hall is that people are voicing their concerns, and at some point that's going to sink in to the members of Congress. They're either going to vote against what their members want, their constituents want, or they're going to go along with the Koch brothers and others. And I think as members of this democracy, people need to do that.
And maybe contact those 13 Republican men who actually wrote this bill, and you can find more information about them at yourcallradio.org. Trudy Lieberman is a longtime contributor to the Columbia Journalism Review, and Elizabeth Rosenthal is editor-in-chief of Kaiser Health News, independent from Kaiser, and author of the must-read book, An American Sickness, How Healthcare Became Big Business and How You Can Take It Back. Trudy and Elizabeth, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. It's your call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Have a good weekend.